Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I'm Liam S. Smith, and I once considered getting cosmetic surgery, but then I figured, why mess with perfection?
I'm Regan Lloyd, and I'm trapped in the closet.
Oh no! Societal pressure, just ruining everything.
Yeah, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Having a busy weekend full of work and stuff right now. Not very exciting.
That's terrible.
But next week is production week for my Christmas pantomime, so that'll be fun.
So how is the Christmas pantomime going?
Good. Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Excellent.
I'm a bird.
Oh, perfect. I love it.
Today we practice a little dance, which is the first time I've done anything of that sort, and it's going surprisingly well.
Yay! I'm very pleased.
How have you been?
Very tired. but exciting news. I'm going to see the Harry Potter play on Wednesday.
Ooh. Harry Potter and the Globe of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
I got tickets in the Friday 40 lottery, which I've entered basically every Friday since I moved to England.
Oh, great.
So that was...
What's it actually called? I can't remember.
Cursed Child.
That's right, because of all the cursed children in it.
I guess so. I actually haven't read anything about the plot because I was just had so much faith that I would one day see it.
Oh, yeah, I read that synopsis and... I won't say anything.
Yeah, I know a lot of people don't like it, but whatever.
What can you do?
Keep you posted next week.
Keep on keeping on.
That's
a very British thing to say, right? That's what the wizards do.
Yeah, that's what all of those souvenir mugs that you get say.
Voldemort's
say,
declared
keep
war
on
us,
and keeping on.
Tally ho. Just keep on doing your wizard work, whatever that may be. You either run a shop or you work for the government, apparently.
Or you teach.
True.
You know, those who can't
those
do.
Those that can't do, yeah. Teach.
Those who can't keep on, keep on.
That's what Gilderoy Lockhart taught us. Those
that's
can't
a very
do,
good
teach.
Point.
But he couldn't even do that very well.
Did he just end up dying?
And now look where he is. He memory charmed himself, stuck in St. Mungo's school for the incurably insane or whatever it is.
I don't think it's a school. I think it's...
No, I think I'm half mixing that up with the school for bad kids the Dursleys were going to send Harry to.
Ah, right.
Incurably criminal boys or something. Anywho, what do we watch today?
We watched more Jonathan Creek.
That's right. Episode 3, The Reconstituted Corpse, for some reason.
Yes, keeping on track with their episode titles not really making sense.
I mean, Jack in the Box made perfect sense, and I guess this refers to a very heavily cosmetically surgeoned body.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was because the corpse is not meant to have been where it was.
I'm not sure.
Anyway, this was a very left field, everything about this episode, I think.
Yeah, but before we start discussing the plot, let's go over our people of interest.
Let's.
So that the audience knows who we're talking about when we're doing our recap.
You're a thinker.
Got a special treat for the persons of interest this week, as I found the season 1 production notes in my DVD case today.
Oh.
So I have official biographies for Alan Davies and Carolyn Quentin.
I'm very excited to hear them.
So Alan Davies is Jonathan Creek. His bio reads, Alan Davies is one of Britain's best stand-up comics. In 1994, he was nominated for a Perrier Award and won the Edinburgh Festival's Critics Award. In 1995, he was also nominated for the best stand-up comedian at the British Comedy Awards. His television appearances include One Foot in the Grave Selection Box, The Globe, Talking Tate, The National Lottery Live, The Comedy Club, and One for the Road.
All things I've never heard of.
I've heard of One Foot in the Grave, but I don't know what One Foot in the Grave Selection Box is.
Oh yeah, no, I've heard of One Foot in the Grave, the TV show, but yeah, I didn't know what the selection box
That TV
was.
Show, what they make fun of on Father Ted.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there's an episode where... That's that show where the guy's like, I don't believe it, right?
I have no idea. I just sort of remember there was a tortoise in the opening credits.
Okay, because there's this episode of Father Ted where they see the guy who I think is the guy from One Foot in the Grave, and they're like, oh, he's always saying, I don't believe it. You know, it'd be really funny, and what no one probably ever does to him is if I walk up behind him and say, I don't believe it. And he does it, and then the guy just starts hitting him.
Oh, that's a great show.
Good show. Carolyn Quinton plays Maddie Magellan. Her television credits include both series of the highly successful Jonathan Creek, written by David Renwick. Don't know why that's in her bio in the Jonathan Creek thing. She has also received the 1995 British Comedy Award for Top Television Comedy Actress for her role as Dorothy in Men Behaving Badly.
Oh.
She successfully recreated her theatre role in the Granada television production of An Evening with Gary Lineker, opposite Paul Merton, Martin Clunes, and Clive Owen. Carolyn's other television credits include Harry Ensfeld's television programme, Have I Got News For You?, and Casualty.
Solid career.
Is Casualty like the medical equivalent of The Bill or something? Because it seems like everyone in a UK-based show that we've done, especially the ones from the 90s, which I guess is only this, but whatever, have all been in Casualty.
I was wondering that because I recognised the name, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. So I was like, must have come up on Persons of Interest many a time.
Other key figures in this episode are Zola Zbowski, maybe? I think that's how you pronounce it. It was said once at the start of the episode. Played by Kika Miralles. She played Hazel in 47 episodes of EastEnders. And a character in Bad Girls who has three different names listed on IMDb. So Bad Girls is a drama about staff and inmates of a women's prison.
Okay.
So it sounds like a sort of 90s Orange is the New Black, I guess.
Yep.
And she plays Julie Johnson / Julie Johnston / Julie J.
Oh, wow. I thought maybe you were just misreading that she'd played like three different characters, but no, they all... No. If they were three different characters, they really need to have a look at their writing stuff.
They have this system for choosing names of bit characters in 96 episodes. Sure, let's go with that. Where they just throw a dart at a board and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Our victim, our primary victim, I guess, this week was Ron Burgless as David Churchin. He was Zola's ex-lover and cosmetic surgeon, because Zola is this woman who is hecka cosmetic and is sort of making a media fortune off of that.
Yeah, so she was unhappy with her body and she fixed it with money and surgery.
And now her book is like, you should do the same.
Yeah.
Ron also had a role in Highlander as Eric Powell. I think it was marking the second week in a row, maybe, that we've had a Highlander alum in this.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the week before last.
It's the second time, at least.
Yes. And rounding out the cast, we have Rebecca Johnson as Zola's sister Victoria. I couldn't find any interesting credits for her. And
I thought it was her daughter.
Oh, yes, you're right. Sorry, I misread that. I suspected that secretly they might have been twin sisters or something.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a lot going on with DNA evidence in this episode, so...
Yes.
I was trying to figure out some loopholes there.
I mean, that's clever of you.
Yeah, you're right, she's her daughter. And also, Philip McGow plays Sam Brickman, her agent. He played Judge in the 1998 Les Mis film.
Oh, is that the one with, I want to say Liam Neeson, but I don't think that's right.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I haven't seen it, but I remember seeing the cover once and being like, oh.
Is it a musical?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, you're not. So
you, no, you're not still on IMDb, are you?
No.
Going to be like, just click and you'll see.
And those are basically the people that match to this case.
It was right? Liam Neeson.
Okay.
Yeah, Liam Neeson plays Valjean.
Jean Valjean?
I don't know. IMDb doesn't specify.
Jeffrey Rush. Robo Jean.
Jeffrey Rush is Javert. And Uma Thurman is Fantine.
Ah. And I'm Gavroche.
Claire Danes is Cosette.
These are all names that I've heard. Rowan Atkinson as Thénardier. Probably not, but that seems appropriate, right?
There's someone I recognise his face, but not his name. So now I'm just looking at his IMDb profile. I see why you do Persons of Interest and write it down and then don't look at IMDb while we're recording.
Yeah. Let's shut that down. So, any other preliminary thoughts about the episode, Regan?
I thought this one was a bit of a stretch on all counts. I still loved
it. How so?
I just think when you're 40 minutes into a 50-minute episode and your mystery envelope is just a mess.
It's actually 59 minutes.
Whatever.
Yeah, it was kind of a late bloomer in this one and sort of a late starter too.
Yeah, this was... I know we talked about it in the first episode, so I made a note this time because I couldn't remember what happened last time. But this was another 8 minutes until we actually see a murder happen.
Yeah, and even then, it kind of takes a while for our protagonists to get involved because they're off doing, like, little skits.
Yeah. Also, they're really playing with the will they, won't they dynamic.
I think by this point, it's pretty clear they have slash are.
Well, I don't think they're not officially.
No, but they may have slept together by this point. Also, speaking of will they, won't they, I made a funny Twitter joke the other day.
I believe I liked it, but I can't remember what it was.
Casey Green, a great webcomic artist, made a joke about the next Pokemon generation being called Pokemon Yes slash No. So I tweeted my own little version of that, which was in response, which was Pokemon Will They slash Won't They.
I enjoy that. Which one would you buy?
I'd play it. I mean, it really just depends what the legendaries look like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
And I guess because they always have a theme, like the theme of this one would be like love and hate.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, this is good stuff. Hire me, Nintendo or Game Freak.
For all your Pokemon needs.
To write stories that aren't really cliche for once.
Well, should we get into our episode and stop talking about Pokemon?
Let's. Okay. We open in a TV studio, once again through the lens of media.
Interesting. What are you trying to say about the media, Jonathan Creek? Media TV show?
Media or murderia?
Well, it's difficult to say.
Because we all know that in the case of who killed the radio star, video was found guilty.
Oh, son. Yes.
Stupid podcast.
I'm just mad that I didn't make that joke.
So, this talk show is being filmed. There's a lady who's like, hey, all the women out there in your late 40s, how would you look like this woman here? Well, that beauty's available at a price because she spent 10 years getting intense cosmetic enhancement to the point that she finally feels good about herself as a woman.
So, let's delve into that.
Yeah, we're given a brief biography of Zola Zabuski.
Yeah, I could not pronounce that surname.
No, it sounds like Czech or something, maybe?
Dunno.
Czech, please.
Why don't you basically check on IMDb?
I doubt it spells that out phonetically.
Okay. Don't worry about it, it's fine.
So, she talks about how she used to look really plain, and we see just, like, basically a picture of an ordinary-looking woman.
Yeah, she looks fine.
Yeah, and, you know, she felt like she was being ignored her whole life, and then her first boyfriend got her pregnant and then left her with the baby. And then that taught her that to achieve any presence in this world, looks are everything. So she started seeing this plastic surgeon, David Kirchner, and she describes him as a sad obsessive who viewed her as a shapeless piece of clay who rebuilt her over the years. Until eventually she left him for a Swedish swimming instructor, who is a bit part in this episode but doesn't really do much.
Which is why I thought he was suspicious.
But he's not, he's just
red herring central.
So the interviewer is like, well, how does your ex-husband or ex-lover slash surgeon feel about you leaving him for the instructor? And she says, well, you'd have to ask him. And then the presenter goes, we will, because he's backstage.
Whoa! And they bring out another chair and everything.
There's some sort of you got sprung slash Jerry Springer pun here that I'm trying to leap out of me. But
you
I
got
can't
Jerry Sprunger?
That's like
I made an effort, all right? And I should get points for trying.
Yep, okay, A for effort.
Thank you.
So they bring him out, and he's like, oh, this biography is more like fantasy fiction, if you ask me.
And she's like, oh, with the cheap shots. And I was like, that was pretty good, to be fair. Like,
yeah. So he says that it was her obsession with, like, looking better that made him do the things, and he just did it because he loved her, and then she left, and now he's going to sue them all and not let them put this book out.
Now, he says that he will make her pay at whatever cost or something.
Yes.
Which
he says this as he's being dragged out of the studio because her manager is like, get him out of here, and reached out the interview, or we're walking.
Now, the keen observer will note that that was a threat made in a show where someone's about to get murdered, so...
Mm. Perhaps this Kirshner figure is a murderer to be.
Well, we'll never find out.
Better get Minority Report in here and get pre-crime to get those psychics to drop a ball into a pool and see if he's going to murder someone.
I have literally no idea what you just said, but I'm sure someone enjoyed that.
You know Minority Report, that movie?
Like, I know it exists, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. It's fine. C+.
Oh, God. All right. That reminds me of the pancakes I was offered this morning. My housemate was like, you want some pancakes? We're too hungover to eat them. And I was like, yes, I do. And I came down and they were just like, yeah, they're not very good. Like, they just weren't. And I was like, you're really selling these free pancakes. Like, you've made the sale, guys. I'm going to eat them regardless. And they were good. But
that's good.
Yeah, I love
what
when
would you get them on some sort of alphabetical scale?
I would give them a P for pancake.
All right. Thanks for undercutting my joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. What was
I've rated things C+ like 3 times in this episode.
Oh, I didn't even notice. I was just like, "Oh."
It's okay. You're meant to throw in a curveball in the third part of the rule of three.
Well,
so
yeah,
works.
Exactly, and I did, so. Yeah. Really, I was in on the joke all along.
My phone's just blowing up because someone on Twitter called Cosplay Momo liked my tweet about going to the court dressed as Prince Eric like 6 months ago just now.
Oh, looks like you got yourself a little fan.
Yeah. It was a mediocre Eric costume.
Oh, you look pretty good. I was impressed with it.
Instead of a sash, I tied a tie around my waist.
Okay, I will agree with you then that it was a mediocre costume.
Anywho.
Where were we?
So, his lawyers are going to make... He's going to sue everyone. He's going to make them pay if it's the last thing he does. Zola goes home and her team are all like, oh, everything's awful. But we re-recorded the interview and it was fine.
And it'll be airing at 10:35 right after the news.
Yeah. And then we sort of... I guess for a time break, we see what Jonathan Creek's up to.
And it is not much.
Yeah. To, I guess, summarise Jonathan's little skit in the first quarter of this episode, he's dealing with the fact that he designed an elephant levitation trick for Adam Klaus, the magician he works for, who is off-screen for all of these episodes. And at present, the elephant is stuck in a pneumatic lift under the stage with IBS... and the audience is coming in at 7, so that's going to be terrible. And then a couple of scenes later, the elephant dies, and that's sort of it.
Yeah, real good bits here.
Yeah. He has a drink with the zookeeper, who is a man with a moustache, and just a shirt that says zookeeper on it.
Just in case there was any doubt.
Yeah, and he explains that... the elephant was 57 years old and had a coronary. It could have happened at any time, especially since it was so overweight. And Jonathan's like, we hired an elephant with a heart condition? I was in there the other day feeding her a tray of iced buns.
I don't remember this scene at all.
That made me laugh. And then the zookeeper talks about how, like, I think that's how she would have wanted to go, though. And Jonathan's like, stuck in a lift up to her knees in shit. And he's like, no, like, bringing some magic to people, I guess.
Giving them the old razzle-dazzle.
And that's basically that plot.
Perfect. Meanwhile, Maddie McGowan can't find anything to watch on the TV.
Yeah, basically. Eventually she flicks through to the same interview that we saw being pre-recorded.
Meanwhile, her...
Double meanwhile.
That is a double meanwhile, isn't it? She's meeting with her editor calls... Or
yeah,
a publicist
Barry.
Or someone.
Yeah, I'm going to say publisher, though I don't know that. Though he has a link. His page on the... his listing on the IMDb cast page had a link, which implies he's a recurring character.
Ooh.
So she talks to Barry. They arrange to meet tomorrow. And then she's grossed out by Zola on TV talking about how her upper lip was enhanced with fat from her butt.
Yeah, that... Yeah, not for me.
Triple meanwhile.
Don't shit where you
Zola-
eat.
So if you're an elephant and you eat iced buns in a pneumatic lift, don't shit there or you might die.
Exactly. We're all learning some valuable lessons from Jonathan Creek and co.
Yeah. It's like how you don't say Macbeth in the theatre. But messier.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Anywho, Triple meanwhile, back at Zola's house, Victoria's going out somewhere, and oh no, there's a camera or something glinting over the over their fence. That peeping Tom must be back.
Why haven't you called the police?
Maybe they have.
The but phrase why aren't you calling the police right now? In the last fortnight
was used. Dunno. Now, I haven't gone back and checked here, but this was important to my mystery envelope because I'm pretty sure before she leave, Victoria shut the blinds, the curtains.
She shut the curtains in her room.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that informs my later deduction, so we'll get to that in due course.
God damn it, if you got mystery envelope again, I'm going to be very upset.
Zola undresses, well, apparently, we don't see this in present, but it appears that Zola undresses and goes across to the TV and starts watching it.
But Triple meanwhile, we cut...
Quadruple.
Quadruple meanwhile. These are not all meanwhiles. These are happening in consecutive time. So the next day, daytime...
No, we aren't there yet.
Aren't we?
It's still the same day. Quadruple meanwhile, David Kirchner, or whatever his name is, the cosmetic surgeon, David Churchin, that's it. He's in his... cosmetic surgeon lab in his house or something?
Yeah, that was a weird thing. That was... Don't cut where you eat.
It's his kitchen as well.
That's why he's called David Kitchener. Oh my god.
Oh. That's not his name, but let's go with that.
Well, I had the subtitles on and his name was spelt like Churchner.
Yeah.
And I was like, why is it not pronounced Churchner?
I don't know. Anywho, he finishes up his work for the day and sees, oh, it's 10:30, I should go see that interview that they kicked me out of. And so he turns on the telly and watches it, and then he hears a noise at his door, specifically someone ringing the doorbell.
I mean, nothing suspicious about that, is there? Except the suspicious music intensified.
So intensified. We get a lot of shots of him walking through his sort of labyrinthian house as he approaches the front door, and he looks through the peephole. Who's on the other side? A gun.
A gun that shoots him through the peephole.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what happened.
I guess that's possible. Yeah, or through the door, perhaps.
Oh, that would make more sense. I just, for some reason, thought that they'd shot him.
I mean, the peephole might be a weaker point in the door if you're trying to shoot someone through a door.
That's true.
It's unclear. The point is the door was closed and he gets shot. And that is not part of the impossible mystery of this episode.
No, weirdly, that one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. We see, like, blood splatter, he drops his red wine glass, wine flies everywhere, the glass shatters, he's dead.
We have another tasteful Jonathan Creek pan to the floor as someone gets shot. Mm.
Is that a budget thing or a matter of taste, do you think?
Bit of both.
Or both. Yeah.
Probably would affect their rating if you actually saw people getting murdered.
Maddie had been watching TV, and while she was watching TV, we also saw that she was reading a mysterious envelope with a picture of a man in it.
What?
Remember?
No.
She gets out an envelope, like, sort of has a moment and looks at this picture of this handsome man in it.
Oh, well, that explains later in the episode then.
Yeah. But then we cut to the next day. We see the crime scene briefly as the police find some sort of diamond earring on the step, but that's not important right now because Maddie's meeting with Barry, her publisher, or something like that.
But she doesn't care about meeting with her publisher because behind him,
she sees,
over the road, is the perfect wardrobe for her spare room.
Yeah. So she's like, oh, I'm just going to... She literally stops mid-sentence talking about Jonathan, she says. Just when you think you've found him, he drifts through your fingers like smoke. It's no good, Barry. I've got to have that wardrobe. I'll just be 2 seconds.
Yeah, it was quite the non sequitur.
So while she runs across the road, Barry gets a phone call. It's from Zola's daughter, Victoria, because Zola's been arrested for the murder of David because of her earring, or the earring left on his doorstep.
Which is ridiculous, because there is no way it could be her earring, they tell Maddie when she's at her house, and everyone seems content to leave it at that.
Also, they talk about they they briefly hand wave the fact that she's, you know, still around because they have bail till Friday.
Oh, and also, Maddie, well, when they're like, it couldn't possibly be her earring, Maddie's like, well, they found your DNA on it, didn't they? So, whoops.
Yeah.
What? And yet.
And our introduction to that scene is her being like, why pretend I have no motive? If he'd lived, he'd have wrecked my book, ruined all my plans for cosmetic surgery.
Yeah. Don't say that to the police. I would be my recommendation. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that might...
I think that's pretty much what Maddie said too.
Yeah, I think she's just like, don't dwell on this. So Maddie, being the intrepid investigative journalist that she is...
So intrepid.
...thinks that maybe if there was her DNA on the earring but she wasn't there... Well, we all know David Kirchner has his creepy at-home basement lab. So perhaps...
It sounds so much more illegal than it looked in the episode.
It still weirded me out in the episode. So perhaps someone who knew about that has used it to their advantage to frame Zola.
Because he would have all sorts of skin cells of hers on file and things like that.
Now, would he? Would he, though?
Maybe. I don't know.
I feel like that's not how surgery works.
I guess if you want to, like, match skin tones and stuff like that, you might keep some skin samples on file,
I don't think
maybe?
You would.
I don't know, man.
Like, the cost to keep them alive...
That's true.
...would be insane.
Maybe he was trying to grow his own Zola.
Oh, gross. Maybe, though. I mean, we don't really get to spend that much time with good old David.
Yeah, he could have been a body snatcher.
Yeah, we don't know.
Know what that is, but okay.
What?
Never mind. We also learn that Zola has no concrete alibi because she was home alone working until late until she watched that interview, had a bath and went to sleep. So, whoops.
Yeah, that's difficult, isn't it?
At this point... The clock chimes and Maddie's got to go to a meeting. And by meeting, we mean she's got to be in the same bar near the theatre that Jonathan Creek is in, and I'm pretty sure the same one they met in originally.
I believe so, yeah.
So Jonathan's at the bar, he sees Maddie and smiles. He goes over and says hi. She's there with this dude, who's maybe like the worst dude.
Maybe he is the worst dude. He's not great.
He's kind of... Up until the end, he just appears to be sort of aggressively mediocre in every way.
What happens at the end?
We'll get to that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, this is a blind date that she's on with him. That was his picture that Maddie was looking at the previous night, though he's lost a lot of hair since then and is generally much less attractive. And he says, we're just testing the water, as twere, to see if we want to get into bed together. Not literally, I hasten to add. That's just a term we use in corporate management. Though, speaking for myself, I have to say, one of Cupid's arrows has definitely found its mark. So he just gets sort of...
Shut up, dude!
More obnoxious with every sort of breath in that tirade. And then after he says that last bit, Maddie's just like, yeah.
She's ready to bail, but Jonathan invites them both out for lunch because he wants to watch her scram.
Yeah. He and the guy both decide to get the homemade vegetable lasagna, and then the guy goes to the bathroom and they talk about him.
Yeah. So Jonathan has deduced that he, of course, fooled... What?
Fooled?
I was trying to say fooled and foiled, and then I realised foiled wasn't the right word, and that was a mess. Anyway, he's tricked her with
his... folded up a photo into the envelope that was not current.
Yeah. Maddie is very mad at Jonathan because he hasn't been returning her calls or something.
And he's also mad that he deduced that, and she thinks he's saying she's shallow, and then he's just like, can I see the photo? And she shows it to him.
Yeah, and then he asks how the Zola case is going. He has also made some deductions there.
Mm, basically the same ones that Maddie did about, like, skin samples and stuff.
Oh, I just meant he deduced because her book, Zola's book,
yes,
was in
right,
her bag.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I was jumping ahead there.
You were jumping ahead, but you were correct, so I'll let it slide.
Yeah. At this point, that guy comes back and is like, well, I'm back. My pants are covered in water now, but fortunately it's not urine, so it won't stain.
I mean, I respected him at that point because we've all done that thing where you misjudge how taps in a pub work.
Also, Jonathan referred to this blind date as a plan of Maddie's to make him insanely jealous of turning up with some hunk, and it's completely backfired.
Which, understandable why she gets a bit irritated at him. Even though I believe he is right.
Of course he is. He's Jonathan Creek. Although he's not very good at social things, is he?
No, but, like, I guess this wasn't picking up on a social cue. This was looking at all the facts and putting them together.
Yeah.
Although, isn't that what social cues are? Not really. Ignore me. Next.
Really, socializing is the greatest murder mystery of all.
Yeah.
They go see Zola. Some stuff happens. They talk about, like, maybe it was some militant feminist trying to get at Zola.
But why would they go for... I'm going to call him Churchill because I can't remember what his name is, and I don't want to pause every time I talk about him.
It's either Churchner or Kirchner.
Kirchner, that's the one. Yeah, why would they not just go straight for killing Zola? I don't know. So, still doesn't make any sense, really.
Now, there's a bit here that doesn't go anywhere, really, where Maddie's like, is Victoria around? And Zola says, oh, she's home. I'm not sure she's up yet. And she walks past her sort of marvellously appointed pool and goes and looks in her room. And Victoria's there in bed with Rudy, the swimming instructor.
Who is Zola's boyfriend.
Yeah, and also Victoria's, I guess.
Yeah, because for Zola, it's like share and share alike with her daughter. It's no different to lending her her car.
The thing about Rudy is his talents include fornication and backstroke. So he couldn't have done the murder as well. And also, he's just like my boy toy, you feel?
I mean, I don't, but apparently everyone else does. Know what I'm saying?
This awkward conversation is interrupted by the discovery of a crucial piece of evidence.
The peeping Tom has dropped his video camera.
Into the backyard. What? Better load that up into the video camera machine.
Here was my favourite bit.
VCR.
Zola went to pick it up and Maddie was like, oh, be careful, there might be prints on it. Smash cut. They're watching the tape. Who picked it up then? One of you had to pick it up.
We also saw... Oh, no, this was after that. You're right. Yeah. Never mind.
Okay.
Maybe they got some gloves or something.
Maybe.
So they watch the tape, and what? It's Zola on the night of the murder, and they know that because she is sitting at her desk, and then she strips down to her underwear, walks into the other room, and turns on the telly, and it's the same string of sort of TV channels and stuff that we saw Maddie flicking through just before the interview started. And we see the interview start, and we know when that aired, 10:30 on the time of the at the night of the murder, which is approximately the time of the murder. The perfect alibi.
Yeah, so that's good, isn't it? So I mean, basically, we've got that one stitched up. We still need to find the murderer, but at least we know it wasn't Zola. So
yeah,
Maddie's at home.
Oh, before that, two important things happen. First, they give the police the camera and they each have copies of the tape for evidence. And Victoria goes into the other room and gets Maddie's. When Maddie's driving home, she calls Jonathan to brag. And she's like, oh, sorry, wrong number. I wanted creative hairstyling. You're probably in the middle of something really important, like killing an elephant or something. Anywho, I've managed to establish a watertight alibi in the Zola case. So, anyway, thanks, but I don't need you. Bye.
Little do you know, Maddie McGowan.
You need him more than you could ever imagine.
That sounds creepy, but, like,
will correct. They or won't they?
Who knows at this point, honestly.
So Maddie is at home, as you were saying.
Yep, the phone rings. She doesn't pick it up because she is one of those horrible people who screens all of their calls.
Oh, did you mean me?
Also me, let's
I was
honest.
Thinking the other day, like, you hear about these surveys that the government do to, like, figure out election polling and stuff like that. How come I never get to do any of those? Then I realise it's because I literally never answer the phone.
I did actually answer my phone once to a number I didn't recognize, and it was the bank asking me to come in and do a survey on their mobile app, and I would have got £75, but I was tragically busy that night.
Oh, nuts.
I've never been more upset. Like, I can answer some questions about internet banking for £75.
Yeah, that's like a quarter of what an elephant weighs. I don't know how much elephants weigh.
You're a dickhead.
Anywho, the phone rings and then there's heavy breathing on her answering machine. That's weird. But then, downstairs, her new wardrobe's arrived. Yay!
Yay!
There's an important sequence of events here. First,
yes.
Maddie mentions to the movers, well, first she pays the movers and she mentions to them, oh, sorry, my house is on the top floor and it won't fit in the lift, so it's going to be kind of terrible. So then she opens up her new wardrobe to sort of, you know, take it all
in. Give it a once over.
Yeah. Before and as she's she pays doing that, them. After she's paid them. Because as she's doing that, she gets in the car, they get in the car and just drive away.
Yeah. But importantly, we've seen her open the wardrobe and it's empty.
Yes, and then who should come along but annoying blind date guy?
Well, coincidentally, one of his clients is just around the corner.
Yeah, so that's good because Maddie needs someone to help her get this wardrobe up.
And we have a fun montage now of them struggling to get a wardrobe up the stairs.
Mostly him, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It starts with sort of him pushing and Maddie pulling, but then it quickly becomes Maddie just sort of backing up the stairs and waving her arms like you might wave them to sort of direct a car into a tight parking spot.
Yeah, they get up to the top of the stairs and he's...
Pointedly, on the third floor, they stop for lemonade from her downstairs neighbour.
That's kind of her downstairs neighbour.
Yeah. I was delivering Fringe World programs the other day, and it was a very hot day. And I never felt happier than when I, for some reason, I had to deliver some to St. George's Cathedral. And the people there were so nice. They were like, oh, it's so hot out there. Please come in here and have a glass of ice water and go to your car and fill up your water bottle if you need to, because it's so hot out there. And I just felt so well taken care of by these kind, folk.
Are they going to come see some filthy, smutty cabaret?
At the cathedral, I guess.
Yet?
Because I was taking things to sponsors and venues, so...
Oh, okay. I'm very intrigued about what's happening at the cathedral.
Who knows? The program's out now, so I assume none of this is confidential.
No, the embargo has been lifted, so you're all good.
Great.
Anyway.
Yep, they take the thing up.
Pop off to a meeting.
Yeah. Give me a ring, yeah?
She gives him the most insincere smile I've ever seen.
And, he leaves, and she opens the cupboard.
And holy shit, the dead body of Zola falls out.
Took me a long time to realise it was Zola.
Me too.
Looked like someone else when she fell out, I thought.
That's what plastic surgery does to you, Liam.
Oh, and then when you die, it all reverts?
Yeah, when it's like Dorian Gray. I know that's not the plot of Dorian Gray.
It's the mannequin of Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
So Zola's dead.
Fuck.
Yep, she's got a wound on the back of her head. Oh, and Maddie immediately calls Jonathan in a panic because, you know, she's freaking out. A dead body's in her house, seemingly impossibly, because somewhere between her looking in that cupboard outside her house and taking it up the stairs, it got a body in it.
Now, this is a case for Jonathan Creek if ever I've seen one.
Yes.
Because surely he is going to know how that happened.
He comes in, he looks up all the house, he shuts himself in the cupboard and starts knocking, and then the knocking stops, and Maddie's like, Jonathan? And for a second you think maybe he's vanished or something, but then he opens up and he's like, nope, no panels, no breakaways, no phantom joints, just an ordinary cupboard. No portals to Narnia.
Oh, shit. So,
story idea. Jonathan Creek goes to Narnia and solves, Aslan's murder or something.
That would be so good.
Spoiler alert, it was Mr. Tumnus.
Well, I mean, I don't want Aslan to be murdered, but...
He dies in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, but he comes back anyway, so, you know, it's fine.
Well, good point. I thought it was interesting that at no point do the police suspect Maddie of murder.
Yeah. And they have reason to dislike her and or make a murderer of her.
Oh!
Because she's always hassling them about... incorrect convictions and things like that.
Yes, yeah, so rude of her to pull them up on not doing their job properly. But yeah, I just thought that was a bit weird. I kept waiting for Jonathan to be defending Maddie, but...
Well, as we kind of discussed this a bit last week, the police, compared to any other show we've done so far, the police are such a minor presence in this.
Yeah, like, they never bring the police into the accusation parlour.
They're not even really in the investigation.
No. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of going for that sort of, I guess, like, sort of almost Agatha Christie-type stuff, where it's just sort of like, you know, there's a lot of affluent people just sort of solving murders in their private lives.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm going to give that some thought.
Yeah, mull it over. Just like Jonathan's mulling over this case in the windmill at night.
Yeah, because how did it happen?
Yeah, the police found a piece of iron piping at Zola's house that matched her head wound, which means she was either killed at Maddie's...
Oh, yeah, so she had a head wound. We haven't addressed that.
I did mention that.
Did you? I wasn't listening. I apologize. Okay.
Which means she was either killed at Maddie's and the weapon was dumped at her house, or vice versa.
But why would you kill Zola and then take her across town to Maddie's house? That don't make no sense.
I don't know. It's a mystery.
Well, it is. That's the whole premise of the show.
Our show or this show?
Both.
So things Jonathan noticed in his investigation of Maddie's apartment building that are important are that there was a water overflow pipe under Maddie's window that was bent in a weird way and recently. And also there was some of her old lady downstairs neighbor's geraniums had fallen into the pile of rubbish beneath the window.
So, these are important for many reasons.
Yes.
None of which we know about now.
Well, the geraniums are important because shortly after this current scene, Jonathan acts on them. But anyway, I digress. Jonathan's watching the video of the Peeping Tom took.
Yes.
And he's like, that's weird. Do you know the difference between a tracking shot and a pan?
And she says, what? And then we don't address that again.
And we kind of do.
Well, we do, but not in this scene.
Okay, they start talking about, I guess, without being explicit, they talk about the implications of the tracking shot and a pan, which I'll spell out now, which is that if the Peeping Tom is a tall person, when Zola moves from one room to the other, they would just walk along the fence line to get the closest shot. But in the actual video, the camera just pans, which implies that it's a shorter person standing on something to get to see over the high fence.
I thought they didn't talk about that yet.
They don't, but it's come up, so we may as well get to that.
Oh, okay. Yep. Because if they talked about that already, my mystery envelope would have been a lot different.
Yeah. So then Jonathan's like, I'm going to go root through the rubbish. And he does. And then the date guy comes back and he's like, I bought you underwear.
Fucking learn. Where's your chill, date guy?
Yeah. She says, it's not that I don't find you attractive. And he says, oh, good. And then she says, no, it is that I don't find you attractive. You're kind and generous, but I can't find it in myself to spend even a second more in your company. And he's like, well, it's still early days, isn't it?
Oh, Maddie McGowan, cutthroat badass.
So he's not taking, which is the thing that isn't even a hint anymore.
Yeah, he's not taking the explicit rejection.
No. So she says, as she hears Jonathan coming back up, and the other thing is, I'm already sleeping with Jonathan, and he comes in and she says something like, where have you been, you love rocket? Come here and give me your tongue. And they start making out.
I don't remember that happening at all.
That definitely happens.
Oh, God. All right. That's probably while I was writing my mystery envelope.
Yeah, perhaps. So they're making it out and he's like, well, I'll just see myself out then, shall I? And he leaves and they immediately stop making out because Jonathan stinks. And only because of that? Jonathan question mark?
Well.
He's been reading through the trash.
Yeah.
And he found another identical cassette tape. And then they watch it, but we don't see it. So I wrote my mystery envelope then.
But they look shocked.
Yeah, he says, at least now we know who killed David Kirchen. And I think it goes a long way to explaining the miracle on the stairs.
It's another point on the graph.
Yeah. Jonathan's been sort of gathering data. The graph
that... Yeah. It's a graph in Jonathan's head. It's not a real graph.
No.
He's gone into his mind palace to draw a graph.
And then they go to Zola's physical palace to the accusation parlor because it's time for the denouement. What happens? So,
well, we've got all of our alive POIs. We've got the daughter.
Mr. Brickman and
got
Victoria.
The boyfriend, and we've got the agent.
Yeah.
So.
First they tell
Oh, an important
say,
thing that I don't
it.
Think we addressed is oh, that yes? Jonathan and Maddie tried to. Whatever the British equivalent of star 10 hash is.
Oh, yes. 1471.
Reverse look up who had phoned her when there was just the phone call with the heavy breathing. But
such
it
a dated thing, isn't it?
I know. It didn't come up with anything, which means it must have been a blocked number.
Or a mobile.
Or a mobile. Because mobiles don't show up on reverse
1471.
Call lookup. Thank you.
And who would have a mobile? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I know. I was like, oh, you've acknowledged the existence of mobile phones. That's interesting.
Well, Maddie's been driving and talking for the last two episodes.
Maybe she had a car phone, is what I thought.
You got me there.
Because they existed.
Yep. Don't know how they worked.
No, me neither. That seems more unsafe than a mobile, maybe.
I guess it maybe used the radio system in the... I don't know.
Ooh, mate. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
So they go in, they're like, hey everyone, we've solved the murder. And Victoria seems pretty chuffed, even though she's really sad that her mum's dead.
But, you know.
So they're like, hey, Mr. Brickman, can we get your mobile number? And he's like, no. And then Victoria takes it and gives him the number. And it's like, look, we've got this, we've already got your mobile number written on this piece of paper that we have here. Because we got it when we dialed 1471. And you rang Maddie's apartment. What are you up to? Did you kill her? And then Victoria starts choking him, saying, you killed her.
Yeah, Victoria needs to also find her chill.
Yeah, and he, as he's being choked, sort of splutters out, I loved her.
So, wow, that's a revelation.
So he didn't film her, but what did he do?
Well, he did
film
her.
He didn't kill her, sorry. What did he do?
He filmed her!
What?
We did it. So, what happened was, Zola murdered David Kirshner.
It was very straightforward. She just shot him through a door.
Yeah. But when she realized she'd left the earring on the scene, she tearfully phoned Simon Bowman, whatever his name is.
Sam Brickman.
Fuck, I'm bad at names. So she called him and they devised a cunning plan where he would act as the Peeping Tom and film her. But he would film her on Friday night, but they would make up a cassette to put in her television of the exact order of programs that had been on before the news of her interview on Thursday night. So it would look like on the tape that she had an alibi, and then they would invite Maddie over as an impartial witness to see them discovering the evidence tape.
That's right.
However,
they fucked up.
They done fucked up. So when they sent Victoria to go and get the other cassette, she accidentally picked up the one where they had been splicing together.
Because she wasn't in on it.
No, she was just an innocent bystander in all of this. Yeah. Just innocently fucking her mum's boyfriend. Yep. So she went to pick up the tape.
Maddie.
Gave Maddie the tape, but she gave Maddie the tape where they'd spliced together Thursday night's programming.
When Maddie watched that, she would be like, why does this exist? That's very significant evidence that you committed murder.
The thing is, though, if I saw that tape as Maddie, this is probably why I'm not an investigative journalist, it would just look like she'd taped the interview off the TV.
No, but there was channel flicking in it, is the thing. Fake channel flicking.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay. You got me there.
Yeah.
So, they've realised that's what happened.
Yep, so then the mystery of how did she die in my cupboard?
Well, it's related, don't you know?
I do. So,
you do, but the listener may not. So, how they're related is that, okay, so, this feels like the end of Scooby-Doo.
In your own time. It was Maddie Magellan, owner of the old amusement park.
And she would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for her damn kid picking up the wrong VHS.
if it weren't for you meddling magicians.
Okay. Oh, you meddling Magellan.
I keep saying Magellan, but it is Magellan, right?
I fucking don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Magellan.
Why? Okay. Was I saying it wrong or were you saying
it
wrong?
No, I'm saying it wrong.
Oh. I mean, I wouldn't trust, just because we're saying it differently, that you are the one that has it wrong, because as I do not have a good track record with...
No, I'm pretty sure I am saying it wrong, because I just keep getting it wrong.
Well, I'm sorry that you're doing...
It's nice recursive logic, isn't it? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Anyway, what matters is how this murder happened. So...
Murder, in quotation marks.
Yes, I was literally about to say exactly that. Yeah,
well,
first thing
too
to
bad,
note is that
I
a murder
said it first.
Did not happen. So, instead of a murder, when they went to recover the erroneously given channel-jumping VHS tape, as they were leaving the house, a builder who was working on the house, that's also a thing. That
There's been scaffolding in front of their house this whole time.
Yeah. A builder in front of the house drops a metal pipe onto, what's her face?
Zola. Or it just rolls off.
But he doesn't drop it onto what's her face, he drops it onto the back of her head.
What? She's concussed, it's bad.
But she says she's fine, she doesn't want to go to a hospital, she just doesn't want to lose any time in recovering that pesky tape.
So first they call Maddie to make sure she's out.
Now, that's some faulty logic if ever I've seen. Some faulty logic. Because, as we've established, nobody answers their phone, even if they are at home.
Not even in the 90s?
Maybe in the 90s, you're right. But regardless, it's not
a
foolproof
time.
Not a foolproof way to establish whether or not someone is in their place of residence. But they seem to think it is. Maddie
doesn't answer. I have a story that's relevant to this.
Please tell.
I may have told this on our old podcast, Teeves, the time when I was sick at home as a kid, and I heard someone ringing on my doorbell, and I looked out the window, and it's like, oh, that looks like my sister's boyfriend's car. She's not home right now, so I'll just leave it and stay in bed because I'm not feeling well. And so I left it. And then, I don't know, 10 minutes later, I heard the sound of glass breaking in the kitchen. And I went out and had a look, and there was a dude clambering through the window because no one answered the door, so the house was empty, so he was going to rob us.
Fuck.
Yeah, then his lady friend outside saw me through our glass doors. It was like, there's someone in the house, and they ran away.
Oh, well, that's good.
Good thing he didn't already get in the house, though, or I could have been in some deep doo-doo.
But also, weren't you a child?
I was like, I don't know, 13. I think it was in year 7.
I mean, surely they wouldn't have murdered a child.
Yeah, they could have beaten me up real bad, though.
Surely not.
I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you're alive.
Likewise.
So maybe we all should heed this warning and answer our doors and our phones.
And yet I still don't.
Well.
So anyway, yes. So they're like, let's go. Okay. I'll keep watch and stay in the car, Zola, and you go in and steal the tape.
All right. I mean, I've just had a piece of piping fall on my head, but I think this is definitely the best sequence of events to go by. So she goes to check out the back and is like, this looks difficult. So she climbs up a thing and she sort of shimmies herself into the house.
There's upstairs a few floors.
Yeah.
I think she just goes in the back door.
What?
I think she just goes in the back door.
But then there's a bit where she's climbing.
Yeah, and then she goes to the top floor and she goes to the openable hallway window and climbs out of that to get into the already open Maddie's window.
Ah, right.
And there's a bit where she almost falls and she kicks the overflow pipe, denting it in a way that Jonathan found suspicious. So that accounts for that. And then she climbs her way into the window and she gets the tape and she, like, it's all great. But then what happens?
Well, it's not all great.
What?
Because that is when Maddie and her suitor come in with the wardrobe and she's like, oh shit, the fuzz. So she...
Better go hide in the guest room, the least likely room that they'll use.
And yet, they're coming in with a wardrobe for the guest room. So yeah. She's been hiding behind the door.
Well, first she throws the tape out the window, damaging the geraniums on the way down.
Oh, yes, that is important. For that was a piece of the graph. She does that.
And then she hides behind the door and she's like, oh no, I've been concussed, I'm starting to die.
Yeah, now I didn't understand that because I feel like that's not what would happen. But maybe it is. Anyway, she wants to just
bleeding
go
from
have
the head this whole...
She wants to have a little quick lie down. Yep. So she jumps into the cupboard while they're trying to shove it through the door.
Yeah.
But when she gets in there, she has a concussion death. A fatal hemorrhage is the correct term. And so when Maddie opens the door again, that's how there was suddenly a body that is dead.
Apparently it was a burst blood vessel in her brain.
Oh. Yeah, that's what a hemorrhage is, isn't
it? Yeah, I just wanted to get the quote from the episode, though.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that's how she ended up there. Simon confesses everything.
And then he's like, wait. Wait
a minute.
Mobiles don't show up when you dial 1470 or whatever it is.
Now, this is a bit where normally we've come to know and love at the end of every episode a little quirky thing about, like, whatever trick Jonathan was working on has helped them solve the case. Or, like, some slapstick humour where Jonathan slips on a pile of banana... No, doesn't slip on a banana peel, but instead slips on some dog shit. But the end of this episode is literally like, wait, but mobiles don't show up on the thing. How did you have my number written down? And Jonathan's
I wrote it
like,
down as she said it, with graphite in my thumbnail.
Huh. It's as old as the hills. Blackout.
Sure is.
Boo, boo, boo,
that wasn't
boo,
the end of the episode. There was another scene.
Oh, was there?
Yeah. They take a cab back to Maddie's. It's a few days later. They've been to the elephant's funeral. It was really sad. There was a moment where...
I didn't
where
have this last scene.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't know the thing about the suitor.
Yeah.
So, they've been to the elephant's funeral. There was a moment where the crane that was carrying the coffin dropped it outside the church, and when it broke open and her trunk flopped out. And then there were 10 circus elephants trumpeting the last post, the crematorium, which was Adam's idea, and it was a bit much for Maddie's taste. It sounded like a traffic jam. So Maddie's going up her steps into her house, and then this woman runs up to her and pins her against the wall and shoves a high heel up her nose. And she's like, start trying to steal my husband and sticking your nose into my marriage, or next time you won't have a nose left. And it turns out that the suitor was married. And he's there looking sheepish in the car.
What a dirty rat.
Yeah. So that woman leaves and it's awkward. And Jonathan says, actually, I had noticed a pale line around his finger as if he normally wore a wedding ring. And she gives him a look and he says, I'll just go stick my head down the toilet, will I? She says, make sure you flush it. She opens her door. He goes to follow her in and she locks him out. And that's the end of the episode.
Oh, well, that is the classic sort of hijinks that I have come to expect from the end of the episode.
A proper debrief.
But, like, I'm watching it on Netflix. I don't know why that scene wasn't on
there.
Yeah,
that's weird.
But that also explains why the episode, I thought the episode was, like, shorter than you did.
5 minutes shorter, yeah.
God, that's weird.
Yeah, I wonder why they did that.
Mystery of the week, Netflix.
Okay, let's make that our mystery of the week and conjecture on it in a moment. But all first, right. Time to open the mystery envelope.
Release the mystery envelope. Now, I have a sneaking suspicion you guessed it again.
Well, I've got like sort of three sub-guesses in this one.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
So I wrote it at 44:56, which was when they were watching the tape that we don't see that has all the evidence on it.
Yep.
So my guesses are as follows. Zola killed David. Note, Victoria shut the curtains? ?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call that right. Second thing, who killed Zola plus stairs? No idea. Used the ladder and scaffolding at Zola's house to get up Maddie's window?
That doesn't make any sense, but I'm proud of you for trying.
Why doesn't it make any sense?
Why would they use the scaffolding at Maddie... at what?
Like, someone from Zola's house could have used the scaffolding they had easy access to get up into Maddie's window or whatever, because there was talk about... Oh, so if you remember, Maddie advanced the theory that when they stopped for lemonade on the landing, someone put her in through the open window.
Yeah, but moving scaffolding surely is difficult, and...
Yeah, I don't know, but everything that happens in this show is difficult, except for killing a guy through a door.
That's a good point.
And my X-Factor guess, Victoria isn't Zola's daughter, she's her twin, or they trade off identities through, like, makeup and cosmetic surgery.
Love it.
Hence DNA evidence.
Of course. Well, I mean, so you did good.
One out of three.
Yeah, that's not bad. Because I got 0 out of 3.
How'd you go?
Well, I have also done what we call in the industry hedging your bets.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot that we were also solving the murder of David. So I thought the people that had killed Zola were either somehow Maddie's blind date, because he was the only tall person I could think of.
He does give off vibes.
The daughter or the boyfriend, because they wanted to be together and she actually wasn't that chill about them sleeping together.
Hey.
But alas, I was wrong on all counts.
R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. my detective status.
I guess that brings us to our next part of the show.
Mystery of the Week.
Well, first we need to decide, do we want to come back to Jonathan Creek next week or not? Is it a cold case, or do we have a little bit further to go in this investigation?
I think we got to stick with it. I think we got to ride this out to our 4-episode maximum.
We have set a 4-episode maximum, and I am happy to see it through.
Me too.
First time ever. Beaten out Luther, beaten out our favourite show, Death in Paradise.
Beaten out Sleepy Hollow, which was a technical 4-episode maximum because we did watch one of them for Teeves.
I'm not counting that, though.
So, are we going on to our mystery of the week?
We are.
All right.
The question is, why is the Netflix version of this episode of Jonathan Creek a scene shorter than the DVD version?
Yeah, here's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix is part of a plot that you are masterminding to make me look bad on the podcast.
I am very well connected.
Yeah, you've done, because you're the one that knew about that weird test show on Netflix, so you must have insider contacts.
Oh shit, that's a great show. You should all, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a Netflix test show or something that they show to people who are prospective Netflix producers or whatever, and it's like a dude bouncing a basketball and saying words while the subtitles say unrelated things. It's great.
It is a good time.
My theory... Let me break this down, okay?
I'm ready.
There's one element of this show, or one main element of this scene, that was in this scene, but not the rest of the show. And it's this woman actor who is the wife of the suitor.
Ah!
So my theory is she's committed some sort of cardinal offence, which means she's being scrubbed from history in the time since these DVDs were released.
Yes, I like that.
Kind of like,
or
how in ancient Egypt...
she doesn't agree with Netflix's licensing system.
Pharaoh Akhenaten came to power and perverted mainstream religion away to worshipping the Aten, or the disk of the sun, and that's related religion. And then when he died, everyone was like, we're not doing this, and because he tried to take our gods away from us, we're going to erase him from history.
Sure.
So basically, this woman wanted everyone to worship the sun, and then when her contract for the TV show expired, everyone was like, no.
That is an interesting, interesting theory, and I am going to give that a stamp of approval.
Nice. Case closed.
God, I feel like we've done some real good work today.
Yeah, we're really making a difference.
Absolutely.
All right, I guess that brings us to the end of our show.
All right, well, our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. Our Twitter and email address have had a facelift so that you and I can both
much like Zola Zabuski.
Yeah. Thematically appropriate. So we are on Twitter at mtdapod, and we are on email at mtdapod@gmail.com. It's the initials for Mystery Twins Detective Agency, if you cannot remember. It's easier to see written down than to say out loud.
Indeed it is.
You want to talk about iTunes?
Nah.
All right.
Until next time.
No yachts.
And we're not really twins.